Welcome, everybody, to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne. Before we get going, I just want to give a very special thank you again to Deidre for facilitating the call last week. As people have been coming on to our call tonight, they've just been saying how phenomenal it was. So thank you, Deidre.
You're welcome.
It is appreciated. So let's start by dropping into silence together. Stepping back from whatever it was that we were involved in today, whatever it was, whatever it's been that we've perhaps been anticipating is to come, and have willingness to allow our mind to find its way to rest in the present moment. Think of the Holy Spirit. We can connect with the feeling of love in our heart. We might even use the breath as an anchor to this moment. Just simply embodying that willingness to be right here, right now. This holy instant we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. And taking a nice mindful breath in and out. With the same willingness to be right here, right now, we can allow our eyes to open. And we'll be picking up where we left off last week. So in the Sparkle Edition, we're on page 262. That's the investment in reality. In the Foundation for Inner Peace Edition, it's page 220. It's also called the investment in reality. And in case anybody listening has the original edition, it is page 220. In the original edition, it is also called The Investment in Reality. So it's the same subheading across all of the editions. All right, so as we read this section tonight, I just want to share before we start that I read this over a few times, and I'll be interested in hearing from you all what comes up for you as we're reading this, because we've discussed boundaries in the past, and that's sort of what this is talking about, in a sense. So we'll take it one paragraph at a time. Here we go, the investment in reality. I once asked, hi, Lucy. Sorry. Hi, Paula, if that was Lucy.
Oh, I got to put her away. I'm sorry.
I thought she'd behave,
but no.
She is welcome to meow. It just makes me smile, and I just
love it too.
They're usually
keeper.
They've been so good with this, but tonight this one, well, we had a visitor, so I think it's got her all worked up.
She's welcome to stay.
No, she isn't. All right, she's done. I put her in the utility room. Go ahead. I'll be right back. I'm going to put the other one in there, too.
Oh, I shouldn't have said anything. Oh, gosh. Okay, here we go. The investment in reality. I once asked if you were willing to sell all you have and give to the poor and follow me. This is what I meant. If you had no investment in anything in this world, you can teach the poor where their treasure is. The poor are merely those who have invested wrongly, and they are poor indeed. Because they are in need, it is given you to help them, since you are among them. Consider how perfectly your lesson would be learned if you were unwilling to share their poverty. For poverty is lack, and there is but one lack, since there is but one need. pause there. I love this reframing of this statement, be willing to sell all you have and give to the poor and follow me, meaning if we have no investment in anything in this world, we can teach the poor where their treasure is. And we all become poor when we invest in the ego. That's not where our treasure is at all. So it's our role as teachers of God and as miracle workers to first accept for ourselves that openness to learn where our treasure truly is, that willingness to, as the Course says, accept atonement for ourselves, accept the undoing of fear in our own minds so we can come to know where our treasure actually is, and that is in truth. So the sentence, consider how perfectly your lesson would be learned if you were unwilling to share their poverty. In other words, when we're unwilling to share the fear, we're weakening that fear, and so we're siding instead with true strength, with the strength of God. And again, this isn't something that we do of our own will. We do this through the Holy Spirit. So I'm wondering so far if anybody had anything come up in this paragraph. That final sentence, for poverty is lack, and there is but one lack, since there is but one need. Our one need is God. Our one need is to have the sense of separation healed. And that one lack that we have is our belief in separation. So that's the one need that we have, is for that to be healed, our belief that we are separate from God.
It's really always talking about exactly the same thing.
Isn't it? It really is.
And the ego, just reading this, the ego wants to take you on a, oh, no, wait a minute, that the poor. Oh, God.
And it'll be, keep that statement in mind as we keep reading in terms of where the ego takes you with this, because you'll see what I mean in just a few paragraphs, because I'll share, personally what was coming up for me as I was reading this section. So let's read the next paragraph. Suppose a brother insists on having you do something you think you do not want to do. The very fact of his insistence should tell you that he believes salvation lies in it. If you insist on refusing and experience a quick response of opposition, you are believing that your salvation lies in not doing it. You then are making the same mistake that he is and are making his error real to both of you. Insistence means investment, and what you invest in is always related to your notion of salvation. The question is always twofold. First, what is to be saved? And second, how can it be saved? So this is interesting, because think about any time when somebody has insisted that they want us to do something that we don't want to do. And so it can be easy for us to say, in relation to that person, well, their insistence means that that person believes that their salvation depends on me doing this, whatever it may be, for them, or whatever this thing is. We can easily see that that person perhaps is looking for salvation in the wrong place, right? We have no problem perhaps with that. The piece where we might have a lot of resistance come up in reading these paragraphs is that it's saying that our insistence on not doing something, if we have that knee-jerk reaction against doing something, that we're doing the same thing as our brother, in that we believe that we're only going to be safe, we're only going to be saved or protected if we don't do it. And so the Course is saying here that we're still believing that our salvation lies in not doing it, whatever that it is, and that we're making the same mistake as our brother. So I don't know about you, but I had resistance come up to reading this. Because I want to say this first. This is all about having to be where you're at. This is not about being okay with doing something that you feel that you're just not ready to, go along with. Because if we feel any sense that we're being asked to do something that's going to be draining for us or like a sacrifice, clearly we're never asked to sacrifice anything. We're never asked to give up anything. And anything that comes from God is going to be easy. Or I should say that a little bit differently. If we're in miracle-mindedness, whatever it is that we're asked to do will flow. If we're in the ego-mindedness, we're going to feel that resistance. So this section is sort of giving us an opportunity to take a hard look and own when we are perhaps in our ego as well. And not that we have to change our behavior, because we have to be where we're at. But regardless of where we're at, it's about taking whatever it is that's coming up and looking at it with the Holy Spirit, or giving it to the Holy Spirit.
I have an example. Let me just put this out there, because when my father was alive, he was a really hard man to deal with. My sister lived in North Jersey. I lived down here 10 minutes from him. She had a lot of guilt around him. She couldn't, whenever she'd get near him, it was always a big fight. Mm-hmm. But she would call me up and give me orders. Did you go down and take him to, because he was an elderly man. He needed help. But she would give me these orders. You've got to go down and take him to the grocery store. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. And I would get into huge fights with her, and it was terrible. And because I was working full-time, and at any rate, when I got involved with the Course in Miracles and I started reading The Special Relationship, it was such a relief. It was so wonderful. So she would call me, and with all of these orders, and I would say to her, oh, yeah, I was just on my way. Yeah, I'm going down right now. I would wind up doing everything she was demanding that I do in my time. But instead of getting into resistance and fighting with her about it, I would just say, oh, isn't that something? I was just on my way out the door. Now, the world would tell you that you're a liar. But I wasn't a liar, and it saved our relationship. And I'm telling you, the relationship became so wonderful.
Wow.
Because she didn't really care what I was doing. She wanted to know he was okay. She wanted to know he was being taken care of, and he was. We helped him with everything.
Uh-huh.
But we did it in our time. Not her time, not her demands.
Right.
And I think that's what this is saying, in a sense.
I am so glad that you shared that example, because I can think of many examples that my mom has shared in a similar situation, being called upon by some of her family members to take care of other family members, and even being asked by some of her neighbors to do things that she doesn't want to do. And I'm really glad that you brought this up, Paula, because there's a big difference between, again, that knee-jerk reaction of, I'm not going to do this. Like, I need to set a boundary. I need to say no, versus giving it to the Holy Spirit and having that willingness to see it differently. And if you're, again, in that miracle-minded mindset, it's going to flow. It's going to be easy, because since we're not asked to sacrifice or give up anything, how can there be an outcome where you're happy and the other person is happy and peaceful and joyous still? That the Holy Spirit has to be involved for an outcome like that to happen. There's no other way that, there can be an outcome where everybody benefits. And so that's what I feel like this is also prompting us to sort of be willing to acknowledge, that, if we're making any decisions of ourselves, we're making the same error as that other person that we're in relationship with.
It's absolutely the truth, because the Holy Spirit was inspiring all of this through me through this book, because I would go to the book immediately, and I'd always get the direction I needed to go in. And when I get off the phone with her, even though it seemed that I was lying to her, I never felt an ounce of guilt, because I was always going to do what the right thing was to help him. And it was just, it really made such a huge difference.
Beautiful.
prior to that, I would go into, well, I'm working a full-time job. You could come down. You don't work. How dare you? You know, all this crazy, insane behavior.
Right,
and it became effortless accomplishment doing it this way.
Accomplishment. I'm writing that down. And that's, you hit the nail on the head. It's effortless accomplishment. When we find ourselves going into that laundry list of reasons why we can't, of reasons why we don't want to or whatever it is, then let that be that little, you know, red flag of like, wait a second, let's just look at this with the Holy Spirit. We don't have to do anything else but look at it with the Holy Spirit, because if we're getting those things come up, and again, it's not about self-correcting and forcing ourselves to be anywhere other than we are. So it's not about forcing ourselves to, you know, do something that we don't want to do. It's about, again, just that willingness to look at whatever's coming up with the Holy Spirit. And if we feel that we're in a mindset where we still are just, going to say no, for instance, I'll give you an example. A family member of mine wanted help with a website, putting a website together. So I set up the hosting, I started setting up the website, only to find that this family member got sort of sucked in by this web building company that is run by a nun and undid everything that I had done. So my reaction was not happy, of course, because I had invested some time and energy in doing this. And then down the road, this person saw that the deal that they got actually wasn't so hot and wanted to come back, you know, and ask me again to do it. And I was unwilling to say anything else other than no. So I was not, I think I probably had a little bit of willingness to look at it with the Holy Spirit, but I was perfectly content in staying in my ego and saying no because I was pissed, and I just didn't want to do it. And that's okay, because that's where I was at.
Yeah.
And, you know, even just thinking about it now, okay, maybe if I didn't look at it with the Holy Spirit then, I'm willing to look at it now, and that's fine. There's no guilt, you know, in that process, but it's just allowing ourselves to be where we're at, and if we're not willing to look at it with the Holy Spirit and we just want to insist that it, you know, that we don't do something, let yourself go through that and don't feel guilty about it, because that's okay. It's about looking at it with the Holy Spirit when we're ready.
And the fact is, when you do that and you give yourself that time, because it sometimes takes time to become willing, the vision becomes so much clearer.
I'm just glad I'm so glad that you guys brought both of those examples. Are so right on. For I've been having the same experience with my brother in the last couple of weeks, and I would pull the book out. I would try to give it to the Holy Spirit, and it was the same thing, like giving me orders and directions while we're taking care of my dad. And I'm like, why is he talking to me like this? And I couldn't get out of it. But when you guys were talking about it, it just clicked. Like,
Let me tell you something before. One of the workbook lessons was so helpful in this situation that you're talking about, and it's in my defenselessness, my safety lies. Take a look at that lesson. I had it.
I am.
Oh, it was. That helped so much. Because anytime we go into that defense mode, we attack ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It becomes, it becomes so intolerable.
Yep.
Thank you for sharing that, Paul. Is there anything else that you wanted to add?
Go ahead.
I wanted to see if Paul had anything else.
Yeah, exactly. I thought you said Paula there for a minute.
No,
that was it. I was just really appreciating it because it really, it was like perfect. I just realized too that sometimes, like Corinne was saying, we have to be ready to hear it. And I think I was ready to hear it because here I am in this space of I'm in the course group and I'm ready to be in miracle mindedness. And I was ready to kind of download that. So I think it's going to really be helpful going
awesome.
The next couple weeks.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. Well, there's more. We still are just two paragraphs in.
I know. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Let's read the next paragraph because this is going to stay with the same theme for a while. Whenever you become angry with a brother, for whatever reason, that's in all caps in the Sparkle Edition, whatever reason, whenever you become angry with a brother, for whatever reason, you are believing that the ego is to be saved and to be saved by attack. If he attacks, you are agreeing with this belief. And if you attack, you are reinforcing it. Remember that those who attack are poor. Their poverty asks for gifts, not for further impoverishment. You who could help them are surely acting destructively if you accept their poverty as yours. If you had not invested as they had, it would never occur to you to overlook their need. So in other words, if you're in a situation and we get angry with our brother, for whatever the reason is, we're believing that it's the ego that needs to be saved. And it's saved by attack. So this says, if he attacks or if you attack, so no matter who attacks in the situation, it's because we're believing that the ego is to be saved. So if it seems like somebody else is attacking you, you could say to yourself, well, I don't think, you know, the ego needs to be saved, but if you're in attack with somebody, if that situation is happening, you know, there's that saying, not from the Course, but if you spot it, you got it. If you're seeing it, it's because it's in your own mind, and that's what the Course is telling us. If it's out there, it's a reflection of what's coming from within. So again, it just becomes an opportunity to be willing to turn to the Holy Spirit and have that willingness to return to the miracle-mindedness. Because in every, as we know, it's either love or a call for love. So any attack is simply a call for love. And if we get caught in the anger, we're simply investing as that other person has invested. So we're not going to see that it's just a call for love because we see it instead, you know, as an attack or as anything but a call for love. You know, we see it as justification for our attack. So I'm wondering what comes up for people. I had something else I wanted to add, but I don't remember what it was.
Well, right there for me now, this is Brian, the examples we just heard were mostly family. So when you say brother, it almost implies that that person is a believer. You know, that's the way I'm seeing it. But what about dealing with difficult people, like encountering?
Same exact thing.
It's tough.
So brothers, yeah, our brothers are all of us. You know, we're all the sonship. So every single one of us is a different, you know, split off segment of this split mind that we have. So our brothers are everybody that we come into contact with. And so it's the same thing where, I mean, I can take road rage, for example, or whatever, you know, situation that we might encounter out in our day. Every single situation that we might find ourselves in, you can think about it, you know, we've hired that other person, even though we might not know who they are, to play a role, to give our ego a chance to prove itself, to prove its own existence. So even if it seems that the Course says nothing happens by accident, that nothing, you don't meet anybody by chance. So it's all this, you know, agreed upon thing that either it's going to be opportunity to reinforce the ego in whatever circumstance we might find ourselves in, or it can, the lesson, the miracle, is the shift in perception that any opportunity can then become a chance for awakening. Is that too abstract, or tell me more, Brian, about what's going on?
No, that's good, but the example, it's a little bit slightly off-center from these examples, but it's at work, being asked to do something, knowing that it's not a good thing to do, refusing to do it, mm-hmm. and dealing with a difficult person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the example.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that you're right, and not doing it, not doing that
mm-hmm.
thing. But the key here for me personally is to think of that person as a brother. That
mm-hmm.
is the tough part.
Yeah, yeah.
That's tough because my ego says I don't like that person. You know, and no. He's not my brother. He's a pain.
Uh-huh,
you know?
Uh-huh.
So there you go. But I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Listen,
yeah,
I got another example here. I love it. I worked with a woman for 21 years. She was my supervisor. And she and I were both pretty strong personalities, and I couldn't stand her. I wanted to kill her every day that I went into work. But I was determined to do this with the Holy Spirit. And believe me, I'll tell you, we made it. We got through it. She retired. Well, recently she invited me to her house, and I felt a great sense of relief when she retired. I gotta say, but all I can say is working with the Holy Spirit in these situations is so powerful, because I went to her house last Thursday night and I was feeling good when I went. I mean, it wasn't holding anything back or any grudges or anything, and I just went. She was having a jewelry party, and she invited me. And I could not get over her reaction to me. I honestly, it was so warm, and she kept hugging me. She kept hugging me. She showed me her garden, her fish, she has a beautiful home. And on the way out, she was like, she's having difficulty with her mother. Who's very old and lays all kinds of guilt on her. And she said something about her mother and how guilty she felt. And I just said to her, and I used to say it to her all the time at work when she would talk to me about this, Mary, you're not guilty. Your mother's not guilty. Nobody's guilty. And when she mentioned again about the guilt, I said, Mary, don't you remember what I told you? You're not guilty. And she hugged me, and she said, you helped me so much all through that.
Wow.
By saying that to me. It's that when an ancient hatred becomes a present love, whoa, did I experience that the other night. I mean, I still don't want to hang around with her, but it was so wonderful to connect with her on that level. It was worth every single day that I worked with the Holy Spirit through this. It was just worth it. I can't.
That's
does
awesome.
That make me? Do you,
oh my gosh! Awesome, beautiful, beautiful.
It was awesome. It was just plain awesome. So no matter who they are, I've got another one. I got another one in the. There's always one more, right? Next, there's another one in my life. But I'm determined to do exactly the same thing with that one that I did with Mary, because we benefit and they benefit. Nobody loses. But I'm going to tell you, I was mad as hell. I wasn't covering anything with pink paint, believe me. But I process through it every day with the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, beautiful. Thank you, Paula, for sharing that example. That's a fabulous example. And as you were talking, what was coming up for me regarding Brian, what you shared, you know, in our jobs, in this level of this world, we're hired for our judgment, right? For our
oh, yeah.
Our
right.
ego, you know, judgment. That's why, I mean, that's what this whole world is about. And so we're hired in these positions for our judgment. So you're hired to exercise your own judgment of yes, do something, or yes, don't do something. And yet again, because the Holy Spirit will use anything that we've made on behalf of our awakening, we can still do our jobs as we do them, but we can still simply have that willingness to see it differently. So even how you said, you know, the tough part is thinking about our coworkers as brothers. You don't even have to think about them as brothers. All you have to do is have willingness to be open to thinking about them as brothers. And that shift will come, you know, when the time is right, when you're ready. It's just about having that little bit of willingness. And so even in these circumstances that we've made where we're supposed to be exercising our ego judgment, those situations can be transformed, just like in Paul's example, when you're taking, you know, when you're inviting the Holy Spirit in and being willing to see it differently.
Do you know, I think we, all of us, every one of us, when anybody is setting that intention to work through whatever it is with the Holy Spirit, everybody gets it on some level. That's why she was able to come to me. She knew.
Yep.
She knew what I was doing.
I agree on some
now,
level.
What about verbalizing it? Not that I want to set myself aside as a person who talks to themselves, but facing that situation, I found myself like walking in the stairwell at work saying, "Don't fail me, Holy Spirit." You know, I just found myself, after listening in on these calls, I found myself saying it. Like, and the other, not only mentioning that, but the other is to label it. And I don't know if you guys think this is good or bad, to just say, "This is tough," right? Don't fail me, Holy Spirit. This is tough.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a
Absolutely.
Name.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Thank you.
Yeah, you're acknowledging it or recognizing what it is that's happening, and that's we have to recognize what's coming up to be willing to look at it with the Holy Spirit. You know, if we didn't recognize that it was tough, I think that that's a very positive step to, you know, articulate that, whether it's just in your mind or out loud, whatever works. I think that's great.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, of course. Wow. Okay, next paragraph. Okay, here we go. Recognize what does not matter, and if your brothers ask you for something outrageous, do it because it does not matter. Refuse, and your opposition establishes that it does matter to you. It is only you, therefore, who have made the request outrageous, for nothing can be asked of you, and every request of a brother is for you. Why would you insist in denying him? For to do so is to deny yourself and impoverish both. He is asking for salvation as you are. Poverty is of the ego and never of God. No outrageous request can be made of one who recognizes what is valuable and wants to accept nothing else. So again, this is big. So this is saying if we recognize what doesn't matter, that's the important beginning of the sentence. If we can recognize what does not matter, and if our brothers ask us for something outrageous, we can do it because it doesn't matter. And if we refuse, it's our opposition that's saying that it does matter. So what doesn't matter is pretty much everything that's not the extension of God's love. It's everything that doesn't matter is whatever we're keeping apart, you know, from the Holy Spirit, or what matters is our turning to the Holy Spirit. We could say that what matters is love, period. And anything besides love doesn't matter. So if we're asked to do something outrageous, we can do it because it doesn't matter. The Course also says later on, don't do it if it'll hurt you. And that's just a point that I want to highlight, that if we believe it's going to hurt us or be a burden on us, that's fine. And, you know, we set whatever boundary or say no however we need to, but we also need to still recognize and just be willing to look at that self-protection or self-preservation or protecting ourselves, however you want to say it, which self is it? It's always the small s self, because our big s self, our true self, cannot sacrifice, cannot be called upon to do something it doesn't want to do. That's impossible. So it's, we're always, you know, if we're doing something that we feel we can't do, it's because it's our small self that we're thinking of. Not that that's, again, bad, because we have to be where we're at, but all we have to do is just recognize that and just be willing to look at it with the Holy Spirit. So what came up for you in this paragraph, and did what I just said make sense? Sometimes I'm not sure. And this is where, too, just to give this reminds me again of Paula, the first example that you said with when we were talking about family members and being called upon to caretake. I know that, again, the examples that I've heard my mom share many times when we're asked to do something that just seems, you know, excessive or just, you know, ridiculous or really this really doesn't need to be done, we feel that resistance. And again, that resistance is because we're in ego-mindedness. And it's when we are willing to look at it with the Holy Spirit that we have that shift and it becomes that effortless accomplishment, like you said, Paula. So
yeah.
It's that shift that is the part that makes it absolutely effortless. And those things that may have seemed outrageous then just flow and just completely fall into place.
Does anybody have an example of what, I mean, because this does seem kind of, I wonder why he waits to say later in the text or in the work, is it in the workbook that he says, don't do it if it will hurt you?
I would have to find it. I'm not sure. I just know I've talked about this section with my mom many times, and I know we've referenced that part, but I would have to dig for it.
Because that just makes, I mean, to me, that just makes sense. God wouldn't want anybody to do anything that would hurt them. I mean,
right.
You know, your feelings.
But who's the them? Who's the, you know, if you're absolutely right. God would never do anything to hurt anyone. But which self is it that we're thinking of? Because it's impossible for us to
right.
be hurt in any,
right.
Right, in any way, shape, or
right.
form with the higher self. And so we have to just look at, with the Holy Spirit, that then, you know, perhaps we are protecting our small selves, which is okay. I'm not saying
exactly.
that's bad at
you
all.
You clarified that.
Yes, we just have to be willing to look at that with the Holy Spirit because that's still where we are identifying with our small self. So it's just an opportunity to look at that with the Holy Spirit, to not feel bad about it or anything.
The ego always goes a little wacky on that paragraph.
Yeah, it does. And it's insidious, and that's why I feel like it's so important to be just thinking about how it says, you know, how we just talked about, if a brother asks and it's outrageous, do it because it doesn't matter, but later on how it says, don't do it if it hurts you, looking at the you that you're identifying with is an important piece, because the ego will sneak in there however it can.
Exactly.
So it's just an opportunity, again, to undo the ego, that's all. I mean, I was just thinking, this is maybe an example, but my sister had a storage unit that she had, half of my family has the collector gene. They collect, and I don't want to say hoard, but in my perspective, being a more much like a minimalist, it's almost like hoarding to me. It's really not, but so to be asked to store stuff for, you know, my sister and I did say no about that and was unwilling to even consider anything else, but being asked to spend time helping her clean out her storage unit, which was, you know, chock full, bottom to the top, side to side, I had such willingness to just take that to the Holy Spirit that whole weekend, I didn't even have any back pain. It was me, my sister, and my mom. That was it. I was suddenly the, you know, semi-strong one lifting boxes, and typically associate that with back pain. I was just so willing to help and to, come from that place of willingness and love that I didn't even end up with any low back pain, which to me was like, oh, my God, amazing. That was a miracle. So
well, I think that's a great example. My God.
Okay, next paragraph. Salvation is for the mind, and it is attained through peace. This is the only thing that can be saved and the only way to save it. Any response other than love arises from a confusion about the what and how of salvation, and this is the only answer. Never lose sight of this and never allow yourself to believe, even for an instant, that there is another answer. For you will surely place yourself among the poor who do not understand that they dwell in abundance and that salvation has come. I really like that last sentence. That's who the poor are. And again, it's we go in and out of that poorness when we think that there is anything but abundance and wholeness and love. So salvation is for the mind, and it is attained through peace. This is the only thing that can be saved, in other words, the mind, our split mind, and the only way to save it is through peace. Next paragraph. To identify with the ego is to attack yourself and make yourself poor. That is why everyone who identifies with the ego feels deprived. What he experiences is then depression or anger, but what he did is to exchange his self-love for self-hate, making him afraid of himself. He does not realize this. Even if he is fully aware of anxiety, he does not perceive its source as his own ego identification, and he always tries to handle it by making some sort of insane arrangement with the world. He always perceives this world as outside himself, for this is crucial to his adjustment. He does not realize that he makes this world, for there is no world outside of him.
That's a hard one to really believe, that we make this world.
Mm.
He does not realize that he makes this world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah, how that is. And again, that's, I think the intellectual understanding comes before the experience, at least in my case, of just this idea that we've projected all of this, that there, you know, this world is like a blank movie screen that we, with our sleeping split mind, is projecting this experience onto. So, it's this idea that we made this world. It's not of God. And actually, we're going to be talking about that next, about why the world is so chaotic. Yep, that's coming up in a couple paragraphs. I'll highlight a few things, and please, anybody, jump in. I like these sentences. They just really resonate with me. To identify with the ego is to attack yourself and make yourself poor. In other words, when we identify with the ego, our capital S self, we're attacking that, our awareness of that, to keep it away. The ego doesn't want us to remember who we truly are. And so by identifying with the ego, we're denying our true self, and how can we be anything but deprived? So it says that that's when we experience depression or anger, however, what we did was to exchange our self-love, and I really think that should be capital S self-love and capital S self-hate, because we exchanged the love of what we truly are for hating what we truly are, because the ego wants this independence. It wants this experience of separation, and so it has to keep that awareness of what we truly are away to keep experiencing itself. And another thing that I'll just highlight is that where it says, even if he is fully aware of anxiety, he does not perceive its source as his own ego identification. That, to me, was always a sentence that I used to think about, how the more anxiety I felt, anxiety was like a barometer for me. So the stronger anxiety I felt, the more I was identified with my ego. The more the anxiety went away and peace returned, the less I was identified with my ego.
Mm.
So that sentence, to me, sort of reinforces that idea that the anxiety comes from ego identification.
That's excellent. I mean, that's an excellent way to look at it.
Yeah, that really helps.
Yeah, that's awesome, Corinne. I can totally relate.
Because we're basically choosing either love or hate.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Love or fear.
Yep, that's right.
We're literally choosing it.
And, you know, really our emotions are the greatest barometer of that very thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yes. Let's keep reading, and we might even, we'll see if we'll finish this section tonight. If only the loving thoughts of God's Son are the world's reality, the real world must be in his mind. His insane thoughts, too, must be in his mind. But an internal conflict of this magnitude he cannot tolerate. A split mind is endangered, and the recognition that it encompasses completely opposed thoughts within itself is intolerable. Therefore, the mind projects the split, not the reality. Everything you perceive as the outside world is merely your attempt to maintain your ego identification, for everyone believes that identification is salvation. Yet consider what has happened, for thoughts do have consequences to the thinker.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to read the next paragraph. I feel moved to. You are at odds with the world as you perceive it because you think it is antagonistic to you. This is a necessary consequence of what you have done. You have projected outward what is antagonistic to what is inward, and therefore you would have to perceive it this way. That is why you must realize that your hatred is in your mind and not outside of it, not outside it, before you can get rid of it, and why you must get rid of it before you can perceive the world as it really is.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting that you felt guided to read the two paragraphs together, because in the FIP version, they are together.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, that's cool.
That's awesome. So this is big. The sentence that I have underlined and starred is that in that earlier part of this one paragraph or two paragraphs, therefore, the mind projects the split, not the reality, everything you perceive as the outside world. So everything we perceive is our attempt to maintain our ego identification, for we believe that this identification is salvation. So everything that we perceive out there, so it's all like this, I think it was John Mundy that said that this world, we made it as a hiding place from God. We made it to experience what it's like to be our own little mini rulers unto our own little universes, because, you know, we have these seemingly separate selves.
Sorry.
That's okay. So that is just something that really stands out to me as important. And so that's where it begins, this process where the Course is saying, you know, there's nothing out there, that this is all, you know, a dream, this is all a projection. When we can be willing to own that, all right, whatever the situation is that's happening out there, it's actually coming from this sleeping part of my mind, this split mind. And I don't know how, I don't understand it, but I'm willing to place what seems to be a cause outside of myself, like something outside of me can cause me to have a bad day, or germs can cause me to get sick. The Course is saying that cause and effect, there's no cause for anything outside of ourselves, because everything is coming from our mind. So when we are willing to not place cause outside of ourselves anymore, like, you know, a germ can cause me to get sick, and instead be willing to look at the Holy Spirit, with the Holy Spirit, that this is somehow coming from our projection, this is somehow coming from our sleeping split mind, that's when huge miracles can happen, big shifts can happen.
Now, if it's self, right, if it's the little f...
I felt like I heard somebody briefly,
yeah,
but it was really soft. Was anybody trying to share just then?
Oh, that might be me. Can you hear me now?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, when you look at the ego, you look at the little S and the big S, self, right? Little and big, and then good and bad, fear and love. And I come back to that same question, which maybe I'm jumping too far to the chase. I'll repeat the question I think I asked like 3 or 4 weekends ago. It was, why are we made this way? Why? And is it the sense that we have to rise above and we have to master and make the correct choice? Is that why?
I'm not sure if I totally – could you repeat your question again? Like you said, why are we made like this? What do you mean made like this? Like would you mind just elaborating on the question?
Yeah, just that the ego seems to present such a challenge of mm-hmm. good versus evil, of fear versus love. And the question really is how did we come to this point? I guess we've always been this way. But what is the goal? The goal is to master the ego then, right? To come up with
the goal is to realize that there is no ego, that you're not an ego, I'm not an ego, that the ego is actually nothing. It doesn't even exist. We just pump belief into it. And when we come to realize that there actually is no ego, that's when we realize who we really are and that we are love, period.
But so it's an illusion.
It's an illusion. Exactly.
Oh, man. Oh, this is great. Boy, that's heavy duty all the way.
It is, and it seems like it can be so hard or it's so far off, but it's actually not. It's actually happened already. This has all been healed already. We're just sort of hanging on, and the Course says that we're reviewing that which has already gone by. So the moment that we had what the Course calls, you know, the tiny mat idea of separation, in that instant, the answer was given and the whole dream was done and we're home and we're healed and we've never left God. And yet there's this part of our mind that's still sort of playing with this crazy idea of separation. So once we're ready to stop playing with this crazy idea and realize that it's nothing, we'll wake up to that love, that truth of who we really are.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you.
Of course. Yeah.
Isn't that just the best to realize that we are already home?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It is.
You know, the minute you turn the TV on, it'll tell you something else.
Absolutely.
So it's really hard to maintain that, mm-hmm. you know, that realization. Mm-hmm. So that's why this Sunday night call is so helpful.
Yeah. Because
it always brings me back home.
Absolutely.
And that's what, I mean, look at all of our movies. Everything is really about that. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody really just wants to go home.
Yeah. That's beautiful because that's seeing the call for love everywhere. That's all the conflict is. It's just that call for love. It's we don't often recognize it, but it's just that desire for God's love. That's all it is.
And there's no death.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Which makes it, you know, that's where Robin Williams just kind of flew through my mind. I don't know why he came through. But it's like, yeah, he didn't go anywhere.
He was just done being Robin Williams.
Thank you, Paula, because he flew through my mind, too.
Oh, wow.
Did he?
That just flew through my mind before you said that, and I was like, no, I'm not going to go there, and, you know, because there was actually a beautiful, beautiful tribute to him with Whoopi Goldberg and Billy Crystal the other day that I saw. And not once did they mention any of the drama. It was all just really beautiful, you know, love energy. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Awesome.
And I just, before you said that, I thought of
him.
Let's read the next paragraph. We once said that God so loved the world that he gave it to his only begotten Son. God does love the real world, and those who perceive its reality cannot see the world of death. For death is not of the real world, in which everything is eternal. God gave you the real world in exchange for the one you made out of your split mind. and which is the symbol of death. For if you could really separate yourselves from the mind of God, you would die, and the world you perceive is a world of separation. You were willing to accept even death to deny your Father. Yet he would not have it so, and so it is not so. You still could not will against him, and that is why you have no control over the world you made. It is not a world of will, because it is governed by the desire to be unlike him, and this desire is not will. The world you made is therefore totally chaotic, governed by arbitrary and senseless laws, and without meaning of any kind. For it was made out of what you do not want, projected from your mind because you were afraid of it. This is big. I'm just trying to get quiet, and I'm aware of the time and aware that I feel the urge to keep reading. Is it okay if I just read the next two paragraphs?
Please.
Okay. Yet this world is only in the mind of its maker, along with his real salvation. Do not believe it is outside of yourself, for only by recognizing where it is will you gain control over it. I'm underlining that. I want to come back to that. For you do have control over your mind, since the mind is the mechanism of decision. If you will recognize that all attack which you perceive is in your own mind and nowhere else, you will at last have placed its source, and where it began, it must end. For in the same place also lies salvation. The altar of God where Christ abideth is there. You have defiled the altar, but not the world. Yet Christ has placed the atonement on the altar for you. Bring your perceptions of the world to this altar, for it is the altar to truth. There you will see your vision changed, and there you will learn to see truly. From this place where God and his Son dwell in peace, and where you are welcome, you will look out in peace and behold the world truly. Yet to find the place, you must relinquish your investment in the world as you have projected it, allowing the Holy Spirit to project the real world to you from the altar of God. I feel like there was so much in these four paragraphs, and I'd love to spend more time talking about it, so I'm thinking maybe this is where we'll pick up next week. Does anybody have anything that came up for you as you were reading that we could just briefly talk about?
Well, I had a pretty big example of this week. I was dealing with a family member of mine who's been in hospital, and I was, really, miracle mindset the whole way. And I was checking in with spirit the whole time. And it was like, I kept getting intuitive message that, no matter what the appearance looks like, recovery is where this is going. I kept getting that recurring intuitive message from spirit. And then I had a really, awesome example that there's still a part of my mind that is invested in the body, because one of my family members called me with all these, stories from the doctor and was quite upset and telling me things like, we've signed a do not resuscitate order. So if, the breath stops, then there's nothing that's going to stand in the way. And I had, brief moments of, gosh, like maybe my intuition was wrong, and stuff like this, because I have, I had a personal attachment to the identity of the body. So I had to really look at this week, really look at it really deeply on a really deep level and look at how I still had investment there. And then I went to go see my dad today, and it was like, no, no, I kept getting these reaffirming intuitive messages that, you know, my intuition was right and to trust it. So I'm sitting there with him and we go home, and then this morning I get a call and my stepmother's saying how the doctor came in, and this is the same doctor who is basically saying, you know, prepare yourself for your father's transition. And he says, I'm just dumbfounded. Your dad has 9 lives and it looks like he's going to recover. I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, this is really good example of, you know, how I chose to go in my mind to a place where I doubted myself. So there's still a part of my mind that is invested in that ego place where I chose to go. And it's just been really interesting because I'm doing all of this in my mind because my family's not into A Course in Miracles, and sort of going there brings up fear. So I'm doing this all in my mind. Like, I'm having conversations with spirit in my mind when I'm sitting there with my dad and everything. So it's been really interesting. Just to, yeah.
Wow. Great.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful example. And tell me if, you know, I don't, these are my words, but what stands out at me is your willingness to look at where you said you're still invested in ego or in, you know, body or I think those were your words.
Yeah.
That willingness to look brings about that massive miracle that shows that there's no order of difficulty in miracles, whether it's a small paper cut or, you know, some sort of all-out terrible disease, that healing that we see comes from the healing in our mind. So I just feel like the miracle that you received was reflected in your dad. Does that?
Yeah, because I really, at the beginning of the week, I really felt like, when I was sitting with him, it was like I was really seeing, I wasn't seeing the body. I was really seeing the spirit of my dad, like the inner child of my dad that was calling out for love. And it wasn't until later on in the week when I had the call from my stepmother who, you know, was quite emotional and was repeating to me, you know, what the doctor had told her and all of these things. And it's interesting because I had chosen, yesterday I went to go see my dad on my own. And I specifically chose not to invest any energy in medical reports. And I didn't talk to nurses and doctors for exactly that reason, is that I didn't want to invest in what was going on, you know, the story with the body. And it wasn't until that phone call that my mind, I allowed my mind to go there, to go to that investment and to doubt my intuition. Mm-hmm. So it was really interesting.
That's beautiful. Thank you so
mm-hmm.
much for sharing. One thing that just comes up for me that I'll throw out there is the section in the manual for teachers, should healing be repeated? And I believe it might be in that section. I'm saying this because I know that there's other, you know, folks on the call too who, you know, we have people in our lives who are struggling with illness, that to doubt a healing because of the continuing appearance of symptoms is a mistake in the form of lack of trust. So even if it seems like the other person, you know, might still be unwell, it's a beautiful section to read because we can still trust that healing has happened even if there still seem to be physical symptoms. So that just came up for me that I wanted to recommend that section. It's the Should Healing Be Repeated section in the manual.
Thank you.
Wow, thank you. Thank you, Deidre. Thank you, Paula. Thank you, everybody. Brian, Paul, Carol, everybody on the call. I think there's a few people that didn't get to check in the beginning, too. So, wow.
Excuse
thank
me,
you all
Corinne.
So much. What, yes?
Hi, this is Carla. I stepped in the
oh.
room. I had 45 minutes.
Hi, Carla.
Ago.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks. I didn't hear what section you read, so I figured I would ask.
We are, we just finished. Which book do you have? Is it the Foundation for Inner Peace edition?
Uh-huh, sure is.
We just finished the section, where did my bookmark go? It was page 220. We just finished the section in the investment in reality.
Okay, thank you so much.
If you want to reread anything, that's where we were.
Yes, I will.
Good. Good to hear your voice. So, yeah, so this is it for tonight, and I look forward to reconnecting, reconvening next week. So thank you, everybody, so much for being here. Love you all.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.
Thanks, Corinne.
Night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye.
Bye-bye.